It is a very talky kind of day.
Yeah. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we talk a mishmash of things, including cash fares, amazing awards, and we talk about the Hyatt devaluation. Or I suppose it's just an award chart tweak because it's not quite a devaluation. Or should we call it an enhancement, Tom?
I just call a spade, Trevor. You know, it's a deval. Come on. There's no lipstick on this pig.
Yeah, I was trying to find something positive about it, but it just doesn't. It just looks like a lot of bad, unfortunately.
I mean, I guess technically there is the remote possibility that you could pay less for certain, you know, off-peak properties, but you know, how often do you see those like low off-peak redemptions anyway? They're pretty rare in its current incarnation. What makes you think it'd be, you know, any more plentiful in the new carnation?
I tend to agree. And the other side, though, is and I'm going roughly off of Gary Leff's at View from the Wings analysis. If you look at the savings at the lowest level, you're talking about the best possible case of a Cat 1 at 14.3%. So put that into perspective. That's 500 points is your best possible upside there. Now, your worst possible downside looks to be at the, let's see, is this the category, category 8, which can be as much as 66.7% higher. 66.7% higher when 45K is the number that you're starting with. So you're talking about massive, massive deltas when you look at the bottom of the chart to the top of the chart.
Almost feels like an end of an era. I mean, I think this is going to definitely curtail people's travel style a little bit. Definitely going to curtail mine. I mean, you know, I'm still probably going to give a good amount of wallet share to Hyatt, but some of these aspirational, you know, opportunities that are out there, they're just going to be a lot fewer and farther between, I think.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. The first thing I thought about this was thinking back a couple of weeks ago, or maybe it was a few weeks ago now, there was a college student that was doing a test to see how fast information or a rumor would spread on Reddit. And it included like a Cat 9 and maybe even Hyatt added a Cat 10 and they had a business or a premium card and some other changes. And I'm almost thinking to myself, can we trade this for that?
I guess in this case, fiction is better than truth.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, I mean, and the irony was, is I think the fiction was almost more believable than this. I mean, in a world where Bilt just got thrashed for becoming more complex, we're seeing Hyatt just do the exact same thing. And I know that they've probably been working on this for 6 months or 9 months, but you know, this is definitely feeling like a little bit of a read the room sort of situation.
Well, I mean, I guess the one silver lining you could see is it didn't seem like they're going to be doing that many category changes. I mean, why do they need to? Because they can just pretty much start charging double or, you know, some ridiculous multiple, you know, with peak rates, you know, for some of these, you know, properties that already play games with availability. So, you know, what was already a little hard to obtain is going to be completely unobtainable. So...
Yeah, that's one interesting thing that I think some of the bloggers teased, and I assume since it seemed to be a consistent thing, that it was probably in some, you know, embargoed release or something. They seem to imply that by having a wider range per category, some hotels might not graduate to the next category, mm-hmm. which I suppose if it really does go that way, and it brings some Cat 5s down to a Cat 4, I could see there being value there.
I mean, it definitely feels like spin from Hyatt, not so much, you know, something the bloggers have inside information on. It just feels like that's the one spin that they're going to make on this change, saying, hey, if we've got some of these college town properties that have, you know, outsized weekend rates and then, you know, 5 days or 6 days out of the week, you know, it's normal rates, you know, we can kind of keep them at a normal category and just kind of have this kind of peak availability just for those, you know, weird times when we have, you know, excess demand.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that probably does a lot better for the, at least for people that are, you know, in these college towns. I have to believe that that's going to be one of the few silver linings. So, we've talked about the bad news. How are you going to adapt here? I think they're still going to do their annual hotel category hop or downgrade in, I think, April, May. And this is going to go into effect in May. What's your strategy as you try to plan for the next 12 months? Or I suppose the next 13 months because, well, no, the being able to book a month out probably doesn't start until May as well, right? So next 12 months, what's your strategy?
You know, I mean, probably the most immediate thing is definitely going to be holding on to those Cat 1 through 4s a lot more closely and making sure I get utilize them at the right times. You know, I think suddenly some of those card free night awards that you get, you know, on your anniversary or, you know, at the spend levels and or some of the milestone free nights you get from the World of Hyatt program, those suddenly got a lot more valuable, didn't they?
Yeah, just after I burned like four or five of them in Australia in January, I'm feeling pretty good about that now. yeah, I think that's an astute take. I really do, especially because the latitude that they're that these hotels are now given. You and I travel, I would say fairly similarly, right? Mm-hmm. I don't have a single trip that's booked fully right now, which is actually a very unsettling thing. And I don't even
same.
I don't even fully know where I want to be in most of these periods. I think yeah. I've got like two or three hotels, but like any booking that I make now, I'm probably going to have a 50-50 shot. It's almost the type of thing where I need to just book like one night per booking, you know, one night booking in sequential format. So it gives me a lot of the flexibility to just be able to cancel here and there and then still have some of that flexibility.
Yeah. What do you, you know, one of the things I should probably be doing is start thinking about, you know, what are some of those aspirational bookings that I want to make? And, you know, strangely enough, in the World of Hyatt program, I'm having a hard time thinking about what is really something that I want to stay at. You know, is it a Park Hyatt in New York City? No, I'm not really that big a fan of that place. Maybe a Park Hyatt Tokyo? You know, that might be cool now that they've reopened.
It's renovated.
Yeah, but, you know, Park Hyatt Sydney, I mean, I literally have been there more than any other hotel in Australia. And I don't think I need to stay there again. As nice as a place as it is. So there's, you know, there's limited places, I think, in the world of Hyatt program that I feel really strongly about, oh, I got to get in now while the getting's good.
You know, it's funny that you say the Park Hyatt Sydney. The hotel I'd really like to stay at now, the next time I get there, is probably the Pier 1 on the other side of the bridge. Mm. I mean, the Park Hyatt Sydney is fantastic. Don't get me wrong. I think it, last time we were there, I think it was getting a little long in the tooth. It could be, you know, a good candidate for what the Park Hyatt Tokyo went through. But that Pier 1 is just on the other side of the bridge. It's just as convenient to everything. It's, you know, maybe another 100 feet. And it just seems like a new, interesting property to check out. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a trend that I'm seeing more and more in sort of when I look at different cities. The Hyatts are my mainstay, but they're less and less interesting for like hotels that I've been to and return. Don't get me wrong. I'll stay at the Hyatt Regency Sydney probably, you know, a bunch more times. I'll definitely go back to the Grand Hyatt Melbourne. But like if I look at the Hyatt Regency Brisbane, I've been there. It's a fine hotel. It's uninspiring. If it's cheaper to stay at the Marriott across town, I'm going to do that. I really see like this is starting to change my mindset from, you know, that Hyatt must be Hyatt loyalist to sort of considering the fact that I've got that Lifetime Marriott Titanium, Bonvoy Titanium. Maybe I should start going back to some of those alternative strategies. It's just, I don't know, like it's muscle memory that brings us back now, at least for me. But to your point, when you think about aspirational properties, I think there's a Park Hyatt in Taipei that's either opened or soon to open. There's a Park Hyatt in Marrakesh that looks interesting, even though it's kind of far from town. I think the Park Hyatt in Kuala Lumpur sounds interesting.
The New Merdeka building. Yes, that's another one that could be on my list. Or maybe the Park Hyatt in Saigon. I never did make it to that one, even though I booked it once and had to cancel.
But that one you're probably going to pay in cash anyway because it's probably going to be cheaper.
That's a good point. There's a number of Park Hyatts in the world where, yeah, the cash rates are pretty attractive. And quite honestly, you're probably better off using cash than points anyway.
Yeah, the hotels that I still feel drawn back to in the Hyatt portfolio, I think are more in Europe. I mean, they have the old world sort of charm, like the Park Hyatt Vienna is just such a gorgeous hotel. I don't know if I'm going to see myself doing the Park Hyatt Vendome, but there's three or five other great looking hotels in Paris that I'm very, very interested in. I know I want to see stay at the Hyatt Centric Reims. I never know how to pronounce that. Mm-hmm. But you know, in the Champagne region, there's a new Hyatt in Rome, right by the Milan Centrale. There's the Thompson in Madrid, which I've spoken so highly of in the past. So Europe has just a lot of beautiful, beautiful hotels, but I'm sure that other
okay,
brands
Mr. Europe.
Are great. I know.
Of course, someone is giving us all kinds of European centric destinations. You've just been on that kick lately, man. You've just been all about the Europes.
I haven't been back to Europe since September. No, October.
We were in Europe in October. Oh my goodness!
Yeah, I mean, come on, that's been over 4 months. I might not get back there in 6 months.
This could be true. This could be true. Of course, you know, this devaluation is not the only bad Hyatt news. We saw some posts from some of our friends who are staying at the Rio in Las Vegas, and. Oh, more and more changes to Hyatt's, you know, globalist community center in the greater Las Vegas area.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that. I think a friend of the pod, Chris, who we've had on in the past, had said, well, yesterday I slept in, got breakfast across the street, had a late breakfast, and then got a to-go for lunch or something. Actually, we should cut all that out because I think he kept that private. Let me start again.
You don't have to mention his name.
yeah, that's probably not a good idea. Yeah, it felt like it was just night and day. One day everybody was having a wonderful, wonderful breakfast, and the next day, a la carte. Yeah, and then the next day they had essentially a Hyatt Place breakfast.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny. I met a good friend that we know at the Park Hyatt DC, which has always been a great place. For breakfast, you know, obviously formerly Michelin-starred Blue Duck Tavern restaurant there. And the last time I went, there was a buffet there too, believe it or not, and not a whole lot of a la carte options. And I must say that is very disappointing because for many years that was kind of an amazing breakfast spot and a great place to utilize your globalist or FHR benefits.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, we, in fact... Didn't we do one of your milestone birthdays there for breakfast?
Oh, very much. Yes, of course.
It was that kind of a place. It was a place you wanted to go for a milestone birthday.
Even people in the local area would go, you know, even if they weren't staying at the Park Hyatt.
Yeah. It was. I mean, it wasn't as good as the Hay Adams, but it was pretty close to there, mm-hmm. I think. So, and unfortunately, the Park Hyatt DC is another one of those hotels that's a beautiful hotel, but it's you know, it's a little less attractive in this new construct.
It probably could, again, just like a lot of the other Park Hyatts have done, like the Park Hyatt in Toronto, the Park Hyatt in Tokyo. It could probably use a 12-month renovation because, you know, it's been pretty consistently the same for decades now.
Yeah, and it's almost the Park Hyatt brand when you think about it, because it's that older style, a lot of the leather, a lot of the the dark woods, but you know, you still have to maintain it, and mm-hmm. even if you maintain the stuff beautifully, there's still wear and tear over time.
Absolutely.
So before we come off this topic of Hyatt, what is going to be your strategy? Are you going to make a bunch of speculative bookings? Are you going to dump a whole lot of Hyatt points in and sort of, you know, take out the United dartboard and throw some darts to figure out some hotels to make some speculative bookings in?
Probably not. You know, I it's just not typically something I've done. You know, it is possible that if I've got a trip planned, maybe it's time to book some stuff on points. I know I'm going to New Orleans in November. And there's a number of great Hyatt places there, you know, or Hyatt properties, I should say. You know, I know we stayed at the Eliza Jane the last time we were there. That might be someplace to look. But honestly, outside of probably one or two cities, I'm probably not doing a whole bunch of prospective booking, and I'll just have to live with the new world. I mean, it's, you know, even if I was doing prospective booking, you know, it's the new reality will hit eventually, you know. And so one way or another, you know, you can stave it off by doing a little bit of this. And some people may be better at that than I am. And part of the other problem is, you know, I wouldn't say that I have like millions of ultimate rewards points at this moment to be able to do that. You know, I have a limited supply and I've got a lot of other things that I want to use them for.
Yeah, I'm in a little bit of a different situation because we've got this big trip that we're trying to plan mm-hmm. with where I'm going to need three rooms in for the span of almost 2 weeks. Is this trip could be a 2 week trip. It's another milestone trip for family, mm-hmm. and so I'm in the situation where I might have to dump a few hundred thousand points into Hyatt and just book a bunch of speculative bookings in cities that I think we're going to be able to do. The concern that I've got is I'm in the situation where I'm less than 4 months out from when we're talking about departing, and I have not been able to book a single flight.
Yikes.
The space is the most competitive that I've ever seen. And, you know, will it work? Yeah, I think it will, but I think I'm going to get some gray hairs off this one. And so anywhere that I can sort of reduce a little bit of that risk, like, you know, if I putting some placeholders that have no fee to cancel, I think that's really what I'm going to have to do.
You know, you're not the only one that's been trying their luck at what's out on the award availability or what the award availability gods are offering at the moment. And I must say there is definitely a famine rather than feast theme going on. And so it has been very difficult to find, you know, good stuff. And I've got a number of trips that I'm trying to plan. And unfortunately, a lot of cruises, you know. That is one of the things that has kind of punctuated my travel life is just all of these darn, you know, 1 week cruise, 7 night cruises that keep popping up and the opportunity to do more. And it definitely has changed my travel style over the years. And I feel like that has kind of limited some things because obviously, you know, that takes up a good chunk of a vacation and leave time. But it also makes it hard because there's a certain peakiness to it too. Cause you have several thousand people who are kind of competing with you for hotels and flights and cars and everything.
So do you think you're going to press as hard to maintain your global status with this development?
Probably at least for this year. We'll have to keep tabs on this. You know, the funny thing is, you know, I remember distinctly when World of Hyatt first came into existence with that logo, which I thought, wow, somebody like did a really nice job in Microsoft Paint. I also remember at the time, you know, when they kind of unveiled the 60 night threshold, I thought, oh my God, how the hell am I going to have 60 paid nights? And I pretty much had sworn off Hyatt at that point, thinking this is the last year I'm going to do, you know, what was a brand new globalist elite level. But then shortly afterwards, I think they realized some things. I think they realized that they had set the goalposts too far. And they started making award nights available or award nights counting toward elite credit. And then suddenly, oh, well, that is a lot more doable. And of course, I did a complete 180. So who knows what happens with this thing? I mean, they've implemented this new chart. Obviously, it will make their property owners happier. And I understand why they did it, because, I mean, unfortunately, this was inevitable. You know, hotel rates have gone up. You know, there has been a major inflation in the cash prices for hotels. And so this follows that. But, you know, we'll see what happens when things kind of equilibrate, if I were to say, give it a fancy word.
You know, I wonder whether having the ability to earn status on award stays appreciably changed the amount of Hyatt points that get redeemed per year. I have to believe it does. Mm-hmm. And I wonder whether that ends up helping or hurting the program. I would imagine it helps because you've seen more and more programs that have sort of done that.
I think it allows them to recognize that profit, right, from all the points purchases that are happening, you know, whether it be Chase reimbursing them for Ultimate Rewards transfers or stuff from their co-brand. You know, I think in this case, those redemptions are probably a positive for Hyatt. They're probably happier having a lower liability of outstanding points sitting out there in the world.
That would be my suspicion as well. Okay, let's switch to something a little bit more, shall we say, uplifting.
Literally.
So let's talk about a little bit of some of the cash fares that we're seeing lately. I realize this is probably not going to be one of those evergreen episodes, but I think it's interesting every so often to take a pulse on some of the good deal fares that we see and some of the interesting awards that we're kind of following.
Yeah, and, the interesting thing is, you don't hear about some of these as much. You know, I think there are all these sweet spots that everybody likes to talk about. But there's also a lot of sweet spots and a lot of interesting things that people haven't talked about. And I've run into them just in the course of searching for my own airfare and kind of interesting things for us to do. I know Trevor and I are trying to plan our next guys trip, so we've been kind of looking at different options there. And I will tell you, I more than once a year, or I probably several times a year, will go into Google Maps, use the Explorer, and play around and try to find interesting pairs of cities with interesting airfare combinations. And we actually have a whole bunch, so we want to share that with our listeners.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one, and I have to. I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit. You put an airport code that I do not recognize.
I probably now looking at this list, I think it's a typo and not an airport code that you don't know.
Oh, well, that's comforting.
I was doing this very quickly right before we started recording, ladies and gentlemen. So,
well, that's comforting. So what? So what is the Manchester itinerary supposed to be? Well,
let's start with that one. That's actually CGK. It is CGK.
Oh, so Doha,
Jakarta, and that's actually, I think, for a one way business class fare on Qatar Airways in their Q suites. This seems like a very pretty good deal. I think $1,246 U.S. dollars, my friend.
I think that's good. I think we've seen only slightly better into Toronto in last summer, but I think that's very, very competitive. And you get are they both Q suites both legs or do you get a little bit of a mix?
I might need to do some on the fly producing, ladies and gentlemen. But let me take a look here. It is actually all three A350 Q suites.
Yeah, you can't beat that, and then you get some time in the Almujan lounge. Maybe you get a free night in a hotel in Doha if the timing is appropriate. Oop. Wait a minute. We're gonna have to edit this out, but that's okay.
Okay,
you want to hunt? Quick! Hoppy! Oh! The happy. Say goodnight.
Good night.
Can you hear him?
Good night.
Okay. Can you close the door?
Oh, I was on mute.
Oh,
I was like, oh, that's why it wasn't coming out.
Here.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Okay, sweetheart. I love you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Please close the door behind you.
I want to be silly tonight.
Hmm?
I want to be silly tonight.
Oh, you want me to be silly tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you got to go close the door.
All right. You're a mean pirate.
I'm a mean pirate. This is a mean pirate, Tom. Uncle Tom. Okay, close the door.
You are the mean pirate. I I'm gonna change that name.
Hi, Tom.
I think hi. You might have to put that on for our listeners, for the YouTube.
That looks silly. Come on, let's go get your
hair. That might need to come on a little bit later.
Oh, jeez. I will keep it nearby. I will keep it nearby. Door, please. Door, please.
Yep, close the door. Close Daddy's door. Good night.
Thank you.
We might need to give them just another moment because they're going to go upstairs and they're going to knock, knock, knock.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, big time.
Okay, we're at 25 minutes, by the way, so we don't have to like linger too long on some of these, and we can probably cut it to an hour.
I think if we just go through this list, that could be an episode, I think.
I agree. And then we'll just give this to Sam and Robert. Like, if we can do a quick edit on this weekend, I might even be able to do that. You have to teach me how to do the fading thing. I don't.
Oh, okay.
One of these days, like when you're over here, maybe you can just show that.
I'll
or
just
when
show
we.
You what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I don't think I even faded. I think the audio's already faded or something. I don't know.
Okay. Okay. So Jakarta, Doha, Manchester. You might even get the free hotel overnight, I think, if you've got a long layover and it's a scheduled long layover. I think that's still a thing.
And if you don't get it free, they may give you a very discounted room because there's still that option as well.
And even if not, there's plenty of beautiful, beautiful hotels.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and Jakarta as well. So, you know, if you find your way to Jakarta as we were saying earlier, so probably some good cash rate hotels too, some Park Hyatts and other things. But anyway, yeah, that's an interesting fare. It's not a lot of money, right? $1,200 out of pocket for many, many hours. Now it's probably about an 8-hour flight to Doha from Jakarta, and then another like 6 or 7 from Doha to the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty cool, interesting thing. And, you know, if you end up staying in Jakarta for any period of time, you could always get a police escort. Now, that said, we might want to remove this from the episode, but if you do search Jakarta escort, you really need to include that police escort part,
I was going to say, your search history may start getting very, very colorful.
We can edit that part out.
Well, or we could leave it in. I don't know. We could leave in some colorful information anyway. You know, that's not the only Qatar Airways fare that's out there. There's actually one that I saw from Flyer Talk just the other day. There was Frankfurt, Doha, Hong Kong. Round trip, if you wanted to do a round trip instead of one way.
You know, we were talking about this a day or two ago, and I was a little lackluster. And as I'm looking at this now, sign me up. Like, I mean, I'm all about the idea of being able to go to the origination of the next deal, but I mean, you're talking about what is that Q suites both legs? You're talking about 4 legs in Q suites for under $2,500. You get to go back to a major city. I mean, I know it's not the Hong Kong that we've all known and loved from before the pandemic and before some of the other stuff going on, but it is still just such a beautiful world city. Mm-hmm. So much great food, so much to do.
Yep.
That is one that I would definitely say sign me up for.
Yep. So Frankfurt, Doha, Hong Kong, $2,400, a little over $2,400 US. Definitely an interesting value. Again, not the longest legs. Again, more of like 6-hour, 8-hour, 9-hour legs, depending on the directions here for some of these. But again, another way to do a lot of Q Suites time, get some time in the Al Morjan Lounge or, you know, some of the other lounges in Doha, which are, you know, spectacular. And have some really nice time on Qatar Airways. The last one is actually the one that we were actually thinking about the longest. I mean, we've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. It's still out there. It's and we won't leave you guys in suspense any longer. This one's pretty good. It's actually to our home city, right? It's Kathmandu, Doha to Dulles for $1,558.
Yeah, and from what I've heard from folks that have been to Kathmandu more recently than Michael Rubiano, who had been on a prior episode, It seems like it's a lot safer now. Not that it wasn't safe. It was just, you know, a momentary issue, and that momentary issue seems to have passed. So a beautiful city to be able to go explore that, you know, we might not normally find ourselves compelled to go. Number one, and number two, you get that nice long leg. I mean, that is a nice long flight from Doha to Dulles.
Good 14 hours.
Yeah, and as somebody who's probably done that a half dozen times, if not more, I can tell you that you're going to get your sleep, you're going to get your wonderful meal, and I think they still do the your dining time or anytime dining. It just makes for a nice experience. I do think that sometimes they can have odd flight times. I think they fly to Dulles two times a day, and one of them is like a really early departure, which isn't amazing, but... still, you get a nice long leg on a wonderful product.
Well, and Qatar Airways is not the only Middle Eastern carrier playing a little bit of ball here. The cheapest flight that we have on our list to talk about today is come up. Do you want to present that one?
Yeah, Hanoi to Abu Dhabi to Lisbon on Etihad Airlines or Airways, I should say.
And how much is that?
At $1,199 or so. I hate to say it, but you get what you pay for when you're comparing pricing between Qatar and Etihad.
Probably. You know what? There is a little bit of an interesting flight on this one. I was looking at a couple of the flights for the Abu Dhabi to Lisbon, and one of them's operated by HiFly. You can actually do a operated by HiFly ticket purchased through Etihad for this one-way business class fare on some select dates on an A330.
Oh, so it's not the A380 that they had flown one or two times.
I think that A380 has left the HiFly fleet, unfortunately. But still, you know, it's. I wouldn't expect you to have a great experience on a HiFly flight, but it might be interesting.
I mean, at least you'll be flying high on HiFly.
I guess.
There we go. Yeah. I actually haven't even... I wasn't even able to find what their seats look like on HiFly.
Yeah, I've yet to see any kind of YouTube videos or other trip reports on HiFly, so clearly not high on an influencer's list. So my guess is it's probably not too flashy, blingy.
Yeah, it looks like 1 mile at a time might have shared... something. It looks like they might be lay flats at least, but it doesn't look like they're the kind of lay flats you want to be in, like the
angled lay flat, or
well, it looks like the ones with the ottomans.
Oh, okay. And so it's like sort of the older generation ones.
Yeah, like a 222. You don't have a aisle configuration, or you don't have everybody have. Yeah. Oh, yes. You know, you're climbing over your seatmate if you're on the window.
Sounds like LATAM or Ethiopian or Turkish specials.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're not flying high on HiFly, but if you're interested in trying to fly on a HiFly aircraft, that seems like it's the way to do it. And, you know, the experience is probably not going to be that much worse than flying on Etihad Metal anyway.
Nope. Anyway, there's some really interesting fares out there, you know. So for you guys in the public, you know, definitely have fun. Go into... Google Maps Explore and be creative, especially when you originate outside the U.S. because that's where that seems to be the key. You know, find some of these lower cost countries in Southeast Asia and elsewhere, and you will probably find something that might be interesting.
Yeah, and that I think that's the thing. It makes this conversation a little bit more niche, but I think the community that listens to us are probably more apt to you know explore some of these things than you know some of your other normal I suppose podcasts. I think a lot of the messages I get from our listeners, they're looking around, they're trying these different things, and I think that's just absolutely awesome.
Yep, and you know, kudos to you if you do it, and definitely some things for you. Maybe that'll inspire you. Again, things that I saw in my researching for various trips that I'm doing and thought I would share and hopefully give some ideas to people out there. Because, you know, that's some of the best trips I've had have gotten a lot of inspiration from other people in the Miles and Points community that have been kind enough to share their ideas with me.
Thank you so much for sharing here. So we've got some amazing awards as well. Why don't we... Why don't we start with Porter?
Yeah, so, you know, some people may or may not have realized it, but, you know, Atmos Rewards, Alaska Airways loyalty program, has partnered with Porter recently. And I don't know how many of you know Porter either, but Porter is another very quirky Canadian airline, one that I've yet to fly the raccoon.
I was about to say, is that the raccoon or a chipmunk?
I think it's the raccoon. I think their mascot is the raccoon.
If I recall correctly, back in June, one of our friends on that guy's trip, Jeff, had flown Porter, and he intentionally wanted to fly Porter Airlines.
Yes.
I don't know why he wanted to do that long of a flight on them, though.
Yeah, I don't think he had the best of experience, and part of it might be because, you know, for the most part, Porter is a pretty short-range airline because they do a lot of, you know, Q400s and other propeller planes, especially from Billy Bishop in Toronto. So one of the things that now they are Atmos partner is, you know, you can fly, for instance, from D.C. to Billy Bishop in Toronto for as little as $4,500. Yeah, let me correct that. $4,500 Atmos miles and $19. And for a cross-border flight, you know, to the middle of Toronto at Billy Bishop, that's not bad.
Oh, it's a great value, especially when you consider the fact that you can get a lot of good deals out of Toronto. I mean, I think the January Air France deals had a handful of flights out of, maybe it was January, December. Those Saver Awards were out of Toronto to Paris and Amsterdam. So, I mean, it's not as perfect as getting right into Pearson Airport, the primary international airport, or the big one. But if you're going to spend a night, maybe go to the Park Hyatt that we just mentioned has been renovated. That's a great way to fly in. And, you know, there's not a lot of people that can say they've flown into Billy Bishop.
Yeah. I would like to do one of these days. And if you even wanted to do it in their kind of premium coach, you could do that for $6,000 instead of $4,500.
That's nothing. I mean, I don't know what more you get for that, but I mean, that seems
bit more
like a
leg room and maybe some of the meals from the buy on board menu. So calibrate your expectations on what you're buying with premium Porter. But
there you go. You get to the gate 2 milliseconds faster.
That's right.
So what do we have next here?
So, you know, I was looking and, you know, I was just, you know, and actually, you know, one of the things I looked at was the Explore Your Dreams feature on Points. Yeah.
Oh, great.
And I was putting in a couple of city pairs or cities to start with just to look at what's interesting from a mileage perspective. And again, this is going to be, you know, we're talking a lot of amazing awards here, and many of these are in economy, you know, which again, I'll give a moment for our listeners to you know, experience the shock that we're talking about economy awards. But this is an interesting one in that it's a pretty long flight. It's JFK all the way to Bangalore on Etihad, an Etihad coach. How many miles do you think would be reasonable for an Etihad coach flight from JFK to Bangalore?
I mean, Etihad can be pretty good. Maybe 25,000 for economy.
That would be actually impressive. I think.
Yeah, that seems pretty exciting.
That would be pretty competitive. But guess what? It's getting blown out of the water because it's 9,750 miles.
What, do they make you fly on the plane on the wing?
I don't know what the seat selection. I didn't actually go through the booking process. So, but. I will say, just from a mileage perspective, for the Etihad Airways program, that just seems like a ridiculous number of miles from a good perspective. Mind you, still $270+ in the taxes and fees, but in any case, $9,700 to fly that much distance, I would be hard pressed, I think, to find a flight that had a better miles percent ratio. Although I might tease it, we have one even better than that. Amazing fare.
So I'll just say, you know, Etihad can be an interesting airline to look at.
Yes.
When you look at Etihad Guest, the one thing I really have to caution folks for. So I had put 88,000 and yes, 88,000 miles into Etihad before the pandemic, and we were going to fly one way, either to or from Casablanca, and it was a great deal, and unfortunately, even with the pandemic, they expired out those points, and they just wouldn't give them back to us because they expired in like, I think, June of 2020 or something to that effect. Like, we had to cancel the trip, and then they just wouldn't do anything for us. So don't put miles in there that you don't have an immediate use for. And if you find that you don't have an immediate use after you've put them in there, definitely look. A lot of domestic American airline flights can be good release valves for those miles. And in the event you don't want to fly forever in economy to Bangalore. But definitely, it's one of those programs that I think we should be talking more about that I don't think we are. And probably because of that great risk with the expiration.
Which is a tough one. You know, I was about to have about 12,000 miles expire. I earned them from a great Hyatt promo that they had not too long ago, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago. And they were just going to expire as well. So I literally just used them in a very inefficient manner, because I used 12,000, I think, Etihad miles for a JetBlue flight for D.C. to Miami. And by the way, you can do some JetBlue award redemptions as well using your Etihad guest mileage. But it was clearly a bad award redemption from a miles per point perspective. However, they were going to expire anyway. So I consider it a win.
Yeah, it's kind of like making banana bread when the bananas are starting exactly. to go.
It was definitely some inventory that was going to expire soon.
So this one, Tom, we've talked about this award a couple of times on the show.
I'm surprised how little press this is getting. Do you know, you would think that our bloggers and influencers and all the people, you know, in the whole YouTube blogosphere and Instagram would be chirping about this every day, and yet I have very, very seldom heard about this.
Well, and I'm happy to see that. As much as I hate to admit it, I'm happy mm-hmm. to see that it's not getting a ton of press, because I think it says that most of us are trying to be a little bit more judicious. I say that as we're going to talk about it, but you know,
yeah, so
we're going to bury it in the episode. We're going to bury it in the episode.
We're doing it at the end, if you notice. So if you made it this far, we're going to give you a little gem.
Exactly. Although we know you really niche. Listened. So this is the one. I think we've talked about Miles and More in the past. It's the program for Lufthansa, and I think Swiss, and is it also Brussels Air?
I think Brussels. So. Probably quite a few of the LH programs, LH group programs, airlines, I should say.
They just have more and more and more airlines that you can use your miles and more on.
You blink and there's another one.
And soon there will be, if there isn't already with Alitalia, but I don't know how they're doing the frequent flyer.
ITA.
Long,
yeah. Rest
ITA.
In peace, Alitalia.
Is it ITA or ITA?
ITA. Oh, I guess it's probably ITA.
ITA and EVA? ITA and EVA?
No.
EVA. Okay, a little inside joke that hopefully our listeners joined us on if you've been listening on this podcast for quite some time, and if you've listened to the main show with Sam and Robert.
If you're flying the Star Alliance carrier of Taiwan, it is EVA, and they will correct you.
Makes me want to go do a spacewalk.
a spacewalk? Isn't that Starlux? Is that what you were referring to? The other airline from Taiwan that is part of the big family kerfuffle that is why it exists?
Tell us about that again.
Did you not know that story? That that the owner of Starlux is part of the Evergreen conglomerate family, and that he was one of the, I guess, managing partners of EVA Airlines. And when their, I guess, father died and there was some succession, he got kicked out of the company. And this guy was a guy that was a pilot and knew a lot about aviation. So, of course, he started his own airline, which we now know as Starlux.
Interesting. I remember you mentioning that, but I couldn't have recounted the story as well as you did.
Oh, well, there it is.
So to answer your question, I was thinking extravehicular activity, which is when they exit the space station and such. When you talk about EVA,
Starlux does do galactic this and galactic that. So I thought you were going the other direction.
I wonder whether or not that was intentional. I wonder if they said EVA, let's take let's have some inside jokes on naming the new airline Starlux. There we go. We're starting the rumor here. Lore.
Okay, Trevor. Let's get back to the meat of the episode here. So here, let's,
come now. This show wouldn't be Travel Stories if we hadn't had a tangent.
Oh, I know. I'm sure we're helping to put somebody to sleep who's listening to our voices right now. So
it's a service. It's the bonus.
Consider us free white noise. Free white noise.
Okay, so Tom, Miles and Moore, tell us about it.
So Miles and Moore, Lufthansa Group Airlines loyalty program, very limited transferable currencies, really only one right now, and that's Rove Miles, which is a very interesting program. They've got the shopping portal, they've got the hotel tie-in and points for earning for travel booking through their portal, but they are one of the only ways to get Lufthansa Miles through the Miles and Moore program. And Lufthansa is doing this strange thing where there are all of these 88 mile. Do you hear it right? 88 miles. Not 8,800. Not 88,000. 88 miles. And about $200 in fees and taxes. But you can fly to a number of different European locations, Mr. Europe, for that price. That is just a steal. It's kind of the bargain of the decade. Of course, in coach.
Yeah, this is one that I might one day be tempted to do. If I can conveniently fly it out of Lake Dulles, I could see
Dulles,
flying
Zurich.
This. Yeah, Dulles,
miles.
Zurich. I could see doing that. And just for perspective here, so there does appear to be a Miles and Moore credit card from Barclaycard US, and it's a 60,000 point sign up. You could fly this award, if you could find enough of them, 681 times with one credit card sign up.
How ridiculous is that?
You tell me how you can get a better value from a credit card sign up, assuming that award of it. 681 one-way flights to Europe.
Yes. Or better yet, you could just buy some groceries from Walmart online and use the shopping portal, and boom, you have enough miles to go to Europe.
Well, actually, not only that, you use somebody's referral and you buy something online and you get enough miles to go to Europe, I think, 10 times round trip? What is it, a 2,000 point sign-up bonus?
Yeah. Booked these, but I have actually put enough miles into my Lufthansa Miles and More to actually get to the booking screen. And so I have seen it. So I think it's a real thing. We're definitely going to give it a shot. I know I'm going to try to give it a shot one of these days soon. Just because the novelty of buying a flight for 88 miles.
Yeah, I agree with you. And if you've got the miles there, somehow I think that could be a component of the next guy's trip. I know. think about it. We need to get to Frankfurt if we're going to do Frankfurt, Doha, Hong Kong.
That's right.
You could be in the lap of luxury and then, boom.
Fly back on coach.
In economy. Maybe the way there. How about the way there? And then we could fly luxuriously home.
It's interesting how there's all this bargaining going on. so many people are lobbying for this man here, Trevor Mountcastle, Mr. Europe, to go to Europe in coach over the transatlantic. I have been over the Atlantic in coach now, I think the majority of the time in my last couple of trips, come to think of it. And I don't think I'm any worse for wear, for the most part. Most of them have been excellent trips.
Oh, I've flown at least a dozen times round trip over the Atlantic in economy. At least a dozen times. I mean, it hasn't... Madness. Madness, I say. Madness.
Oh, man.
I don't even know how many times in the last 10 years I've flown economy back and forth. I think 2018 was the last time I flew economy over the Atlantic, which actually is fairly, That's not bad. When you think about it,
8 years ago.
You know, I'm trying to demonstrate connection to everyone.
In any case, listeners, I hope you have some interesting things to look at and think about, because, you know, I don't think many of you are probably had thought to, oh, I could literally earn enough miles in my next shopping trip to go to Europe. But you absolutely can. And I recommend you do, because this does not necessarily sound like something that they're going to keep around forever. Maybe they are. Maybe it's something that's been there the whole time. I just didn't know about it. But, you know, as Americans who typically don't have access to miles and more points, you know, this is just an interesting little thing that's out there. And you know what? I guess it's okay to share it. I don't know how many people are going to get excited about flying over the Atlantic. And obviously these are off-peak, low-season type of situations where clearly at this time of year, we're recording this at the end of February. You know, this is not exactly the high season for flying over to the continent across the Atlantic. But, you know, 88 miles, it's very tempting. And so are some of the other things we talked about just now.
Hey, if you're trying to get family or friends into, you know, get them a big win, get them the Rove app or the Rove Miles referral. That's enough miles. Get them to transfer the miles into Miles and More and book one of these, and they immediately get a big win before they even do a credit card sign up bonus.
That really is, yeah. It's you know, I'd say, you know, getting a young one, like maybe somebody, you know, a teenager or
college
recent cat graduate excited about something. I mean, this is the way.
And that's the let's leave it at this is the way. Okay. Tom, I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's an interesting Tom, I couldn't agree with you more.
Great. Well, do you want to finish it up?
Yeah, let's do it. Well, that's the show. Bleh. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us, and we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get access to even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.